And welcome to this month's Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9 FM, listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula. As always, thanks to Recess Duty for playing us in with our theme song. Let's get started with beer news. On May 15th, Devil's Club Brewing in Juneau opened its new downstairs space at 234 Front Street. The brewery also has a new license allowing it to operate like a restaurant. This means no more 36-ounce limit, no more entertainment restrictions, the ability to offer guest beers, hold live music events, and even have television showing sports. The downstairs space can also be rented for private parties or other events. We'll be talking to Evan Wood of Devil's Club later in today's show. Alaskan Brewing Company's newest beer brand, Wildness, won a Gold Crushy Award at the 2024 Craft Beer Marketing Awards in the Best Packaging for Cans, Craft Beer category. This year, a total of 227 award wins were given to brewers, designers, and marketing agencies from around the world. More than 600 judges in the beer and design industries judged submissions. The winners were announced during a live Facebook broadcast on April 18, 2024. This is the fifth year of the awards. This is the sixth Crushy Award Alaskan Brewing Company has won and the first for overall package design. Previous Crushy wins included Alaskan White Gold in 2020, Alaskan Citrus Wheat Gold in 2021, Alaskan Island Ale Platinum in 2022, Alaskan Pilsner Gold in 2022, and Alaska Chillin' Cold IPA Gold in 2023. During the final moments of the 33rd Alaska Legislative Session, House Bill 189 was passed. Once signed by the governor, this legislation will allow 18 to 24-year-old employees to serve or sell alcohol with a valid tap card in most licensed restaurants, hotels, breweries, and other hospitality businesses across the state. Alaskan Brewing Company announced that Max Rule will transition to the chief executive officer role effective June 1, 2024. Current CEO Linda Thomas will continue to remain active on the executive leadership team and serve on the board of directors, working closely with Max during the transition. Rule has been with the Alaskan Brewing Company for 2 years as chief operations officer, bringing a wealth of experience in the grocery and liquor store industries and having served on various advisory boards for national retailers and grocers. Rule is a licensed CPA and was previously chairman of the board for a prominent local bank. The brewery's co-founders, Marcy and Jeff Larson, will also remain active and engaged in the business. The 13th annual Kenai Peninsula Beer Festival will be held on Saturday, August 10th at the Soldotna Sports Center from 5 to 9 p.m. The festival is a fundraiser for the Rotary Club of Soldotna. Proceeds for the festival are used for local Rotary projects in the Central Kenai Peninsula. The billionaire founder of Chobani Yogurt, Hamadi Ulukaya, has purchased all the assets from the closed Anchor Brewing Company from Sapporo, USA. Hamadi Ulukaya comes from a humble background in eastern Turkey. His Kurdish family owned a small dairy farm where they made cheese and yogurt. He came to the United States in 1994, and after bouncing around at different colleges for several years, ended up farming in upstate New York. In 2002, he opened his own feta cheese company, but it was only a break-even venture. 3 years later, he learned of a recently closed yogurt factory in South Edmiston, New York. That would be the start of Chobani and the company's meteoric success. Ulukaya has stated that he intends to restore Anchor Brewing to its former greatness, including restoring the original logo, which Sapporo had dispensed with. Anchorage Brewing Company has announced the return of the Culmination Beer Festival after a four-year hiatus. It will be held at the brewery from 2 to 6 p.m. on Saturday, July 13th. Tickets are $110 and are limited to 300 sold. On Friday, May 31st, the Wall Street Journal reported that Japan's Suntory, the owner of Jim Beam, is in talks to acquire the Boston Beer Company, the brewers of Sam Adams and Dogfish Head Beers. People familiar to the matter reported this. Boston Beer's share price shot up around 22%, its highest price since March, following the report the two drinks companies were in early talks over a deal. However, on Monday, June 3rd, Suntory Holdings denied being in early discussions to acquire Boston Beer Company. Boston Beer has a market capitalization of around $3 billion, according to the Wall Street Journal. That's it for this month's beer news. We'll be back in a moment with our first interview with Evan Wood of Devil's Club Brewing.
On SatNet, you'll hear the result of deep dives into the music library for popular and obscure music from the 50s forward. And just released or soon to be released recordings by both new and familiar friends. I'm Robert Walsh. Please join me Thursday evenings at 7 o'clock on KDLL Kenai Soldotna for SatNet, the Americana Music Catch of the Week.
Up next, we've got Evan Wood, co-founder of Devil's Club Brewing Company in Juneau. Hey, Evan, how are you doing today?
Doing great, Bill. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for taking the time to talk with us. So let's start off with the big news. You guys have opened your new downstairs facility, right?
That's right. Yeah, we're very excited. It's something we've always wanted, is a little bit more space for our seating and our eating and drinking. So yeah, we were very excited to move into another adjacent space in the building, and it gives us another space that we can primarily focus on doing events and other sort of activities that we are now permitted to do with the new licensing.
I was going to say that's excited about it. That's the next big change, right? Is that you guys have got a restaurant eating place license.
That's right. Yeah. And that's the very illogical name for a license that lets you sell beer and wine in Alaska if you sell food. So, yeah, we now have a restaurant eating place license, and that essentially removes all of the onerous entertainment restrictions that our manufacturing licenses has, and really finally, after many, many years, frees us up to do whatever we want in our space, which is very liberating and exciting.
What else have you guys got planned to take advantage of the new rules?
We've got lots of plans, Bill. Rentals is a big one. So that's having the ability to do rentals with this new space is huge. We get asked a lot by the community. Juneau does not have a lot of on-premise licensed rental facilities for people to have their events or their wedding receptions, et cetera. So that's a really exciting opportunity for us now. But then in the sort of public realm of the events, we're very excited to be doing live music. We're very excited to be doing trivia, open mic comedy, dinner theater. We're going to hit it all. We're very excited to open the doors to a lot of new avenues for the creative minds in our community to be able to express themselves in a new much needed welcoming open space.
Good. Well, I'll take this opportunity to bang the drum for one of my own pet, I guess, hobby horses is beer dinners in the winter.
Yeah.
Have beer dinners. So
absolutely.
I think that's a, I've been other places in the country where they did that on a regular basis, where once a month, you know, the third Thursday of the month or whatever, you knew that this brewery, beer, brew pub, whatever you want to call it, they were going to do a beer dinner, you know, and people could mark it on their calendars and plan on it. And I think I've thought for many years that if we ever get the laws straightened out around in Alaska to allow that, that that would be a wonderful thing for breweries and, you know, people to start doing through the winter months when things are kind of slow anyway. But if people know that they can count on this happening on a particular day of the month, people will come, I'm confident. So
yeah, we love it. We've done a few beer dinners in the past, and they've always been a huge hit. They are a lot of work, but they
hence the winter
certainly pay off, and it's a nice yeah, it's totally a nice thing to be able to do for the locals in the winter.
Yeah. So how's business? And you guys are just getting into the tourist season, right? Or are the folks on the cruise ships finding you guys?
Yeah, no, they're finding us. It's been an inconsistent summer so far, I'd say. Some very, very busy times and some very, very slow times. But overall, things are looking okay. There's a bit of hubbub in our community about a little downturn from previous years, and we're seeing that as well. But we're still, you know, we're still good. We're still having a good time and looking for more routes to get people in the building, which again has become, you know, in these times of downturn, it's absolutely critical that we can now draw people in with events. And so we're super, super fortunate to be able to, well, I guess we shouldn't consider ourselves fortunate to be able to have events, but that's where we are. But we are happy to be able to do that.
Why don't you take a few moments and give us a little description of your setup, your brew house, your kitchen? You know, what do you have to offer for anybody that finds themselves in Juneau?
Sure. Well, we're right in downtown Juneau, which, if you've never been to Juneau, is arguably the cutest downtown in Alaska. We're in a very old building that was built in 1916. It was originally the Palace Theater, one of the very first theaters in Juneau during, you know, post Gold Rush days. And we renovated the building and converted it in the theater space into our tap room. So our tap room has these huge high ceilings and some other remnants of the theater remain. So it's a really cool space to be able to revitalize. Theaters were, you know, one of the very first public social gathering places. And so it's very cool to be able to turn the space back into that and welcome people into it in another new, more modern social gathering setting. Downstairs from our tap room, on the other side of the building, is where our brew house is. We're a very small brewery. We have a 4-barrel system, about 500 liters. So every time we brew beer, we only make 8 full-size kegs, which is not a lot. But we're constantly growing our fermentation capacity. And then just next door to that, we have our new downstairs tap room. And we do, like you said, offer food as well as beer. And we also just started doing cider, which has been very popular. Our food is, we focus on sandwiches and shareables on the food side of things. Some kind of less heavy pub grub, you might call it. And on the beer side of things, we sort of pay homage to traditional Belgian styles, but also try to stay on the cutting edge of modern American styles. And so you can always find a wide array of beers on our taps. At the moment, we have a West Coast IPA, a double hazy IPA, a Belgian blonde, a Belgian golden strong, a pastry sour, strawberry rhubarb pie inspired beer. A milk stout, a hazy pale ale, a couple lagers. So we really try to cover the gamut, and provide something for everybody in our beer selection.
So a couple of questions. Question one, when you said cider, is that cider that you guys are producing or are you bringing in as a guest tap?
Yep. No, we are making our own cider now. We're very excited about that. We've got our winery license all locked away. And so we are producing cider. It's a very exciting thing. We, you know, a big part of cider's appeal is to be able to offer that gluten-free option. And also, it's just kind of a nice change of pace from the beer, you know? They can sit a little lighter in your stomach. I find myself gravitating towards the cider more often than I would have assumed. We designed and spent quite a long time honing in the cider recipe that we wanted to be our core sort of flagship cider that we call House Cider. It's very dry. That's the main thing that we were shooting for. I wouldn't call it even semi-dry. We just have a straight-up dry cider, nice and refreshing. Pretty high in alcohol, about 7%. It's become very popular with the locals.
Are you working from apples, juice? Where are you sourcing that?
We're starting from concentrate. Okay. We would love to be starting from apples themselves. We actually have, this is a little bit of a sneak peek tease, but we have a relationship with an orchard in Washington that we did go down to and do some fresh pressed juice that we then shipped back up to town and did a wild natural fermentation. And so we do have some bottles aging away of a naturally fermented cider that is juice pressed, a much more romantic product that we're really excited about. But for this product, we just don't have the space to be starting from apples. Right. And so we're starting from concentrate. Yeah.
So with only a 4-barrel system, you guys must spend an awful lot of time brewing, I would assume.
Yep, we're brewing at least 3 days a week, usually 4, turning out as much as we can. We have one of the reasons we have a 4-barrel system is that we're pretty proud to be an all-electric brewery. It's pretty tough to get a brew house functioning at a larger scale to be electric. Because Juno is 100% hydro-powered in our electricity, right, we're super proud to be able to offer a very sustainable, you know, there's no carbon footprint for our energy costs in our brew house. And so we're super proud to stay that size until it really stops making sense because we can, we can be 100% hydro.
And you're not finding yourself handicapped by that size and turnover and things like that?
Oh, I think that we would certainly consider ourselves a little handicapped by that size. It would be really nice to be able to make twice as much beer at a time. Most of our fermenters are double batch size. So most of the time we're brewing twice to fill a tank. At the moment we're... Our real estate downtown in Juneau is pretty squeezed, pretty tight. And so still makes sense to stay 4-barrel, stay electric, stay green. And, you know, at the moment, the general national trend for these beer markets is, you know, there's a little bit of shrinkage going on. And so people are starting to optimize their operations, and the exponential growth and 10, 20, 30, 100-barrel systems are not being as widely used anymore. So we're comfy in our 4-barrel system, and a 10-barrel might be awesome at some point in time, but we're definitely going to have to kind of see if the market continues to contract, then we might be really glad we have a 4-barrel system.
Well, I was wondering if you saw that recent article from Bart Watson at the Brewers Association statistician guy, where he talked about excess capacity, industry-wide, the growth of excess capacity. I'm not sure we have a lot of that in Alaska right now, but if you looked at it countrywide, it seemed like craft breweries, as you said, there was a lot of exponential growth, and now we're kind of in a period where markets are flat to maybe contracting slightly. So how does that track with like your guys' sales over the last, I mean, obviously COVID's an aberration, but are you where you want to be, comparable to where you were pre-COVID, that kind of thing?
Yeah, I think Watson's analysis was super interesting. And part of that analysis was that the only growing segment is our segment, which is the taproom focused breweries, the regional guys that are distributing either in all of the state or even in a few states and larger tend to all be shrinking, except for the non-alcoholic breweries. Those ones are still growing. And so we're fortunate to have chosen the model that seems to be persisting. You know, we personally as a business, we're not satisfied. I'm certainly not at a point where I can pay myself what I would need to replace myself in this job. So we've got to keep going, and we've got to get a little bigger, and we got to start becoming a little more efficient so that we can operate more like, I always try to say, a normal business instead of a brewery in Alaska that's sort of a handcuffed business. And we absolutely still need to be growing in order to become sustainable.
Well, hopefully, like you're talking about, these changes in the law are going to open up new opportunities, new ways that you guys can be more efficient, make more money, provide more services to the public, that, you know, that whole,
Absolutely.
Yeah, that, you know, new opportunities there for things that you guys can do, new places to draw in revenue.
Yeah, and that was the other thing that a lot of the analysis and studies in the industry have been showing, is that spaces are becoming much more focused on events and entertainment. And so that's becoming just more and more critical to the function of our industry. The state of Alaska still has a long ways to go to allow breweries to operate in that way.
Well, again, you guys are kind of operating on the what I picked up from Ben Milstein in Kodiak Island, where he talked about the brewery as the bakery model, right? You can have a local bakery and you sell your bread in a town, and you're not trying to send your bread 500 miles away to sell to people, right? You're selling, you're baking and you're selling there. And, you know, that's his idea about, hey, I sell on Kodiak, right? I brew beer and I sell on Kodiak. You guys, you brew beer and you sell it in Juneau. You're not trying to send it to Fairbanks or to Anchorage or to Seattle or someplace like that.
We do have beer in Anchorage.
I know, but so, I'm going to ask you to tell us where we can get your beer. But my point is, I don't think you're sending a lot of your beer to Anchorage, right?
No.
Yeah.
No. And you're absolutely correct. And it's, you know, our industry for a long time was an extension of the farm-to-table movement. People continued to want more and more local consumption of their goods. And the breweries fell in line with that. And that's absolutely held true. If people want more. It used to be that your local beer was in your state, and now your local beer is on your block, you know? And so, yeah, the regional space is shrinking, and the more hyper-localized consumption is becoming more and more passion. But, you know, Juneau's a small town, and there's a lot more of a beer culture up in Anchorage than there is in Juneau, to be honest. And so we do send a bunch of our cans up to La Bodega, bottled beer as well, because we have a really great relationship with them. They're great people, great business owners, and we're happy to have them as an outlet for other people to find our products in what we refer to as the rest of the state.
And I think I see your stuff on tap at Tent City fairly frequently up in Anchorage.
Yep. We have our stuff on tap at Tent City every now and again. And tomorrow, which is Sunday, we will have beer at the Palmer Ale House for the Brewers Guild Loggers on the Lawns event.
Cool.
So I realize the peninsula is a little bit of a ways, but if you're looking for a drive and a fun Sunday afternoon, I think it's going to be a really, really great event at the Palmer Ale House. It's focused on lagers in the summertime. It looks like the weather's going to be good. And the Brewers Guild is an absolutely vital nonprofit for our industry. So if you'd like to support craft beer in Alaska, supporting this event and helping fund the Brewers Guild, which in turn helps fund our lobbying efforts to improve our licensing, is absolutely an awesome way to support the industry. And there is a bunch of very cool Alaskan lagers and pilsners that are going to be up in Palmer this Sunday.
Since you bring up events, I'm sure you guys went to Haynes.
Yeah.
But are you going to be attending any events over the rest of the summer?
Through the summer, it will be the Palmer Ale House. Okay. We'll be up there this Sunday. And then looking forward to the winter, we're going to be excited to get back up for AK Crafted, which is becoming an annual event in Anchorage that I think is a very, very cool collaborative event. But I think it has the biggest draw of breweries in the state. Don't quote me, but that's what it feels like from my attendance there. So we'll be there in the winter as well.
Any way I could talk you into coming to the Frozen River Fest here in February? You haven't lived till you've drunk beer outside in February.
We are honestly very easily convinced of such things. So, yeah, I bet there's a way you can convince us.
Okay. It's kind of crazy, but it's a lot of fun. Is there anything else that you want to make sure that folks know about Devil's Club?
if you've never had our beer, please give it a try. It's, you know, it's for sale at La Bodega in Anchorage, for those of you closer to South Central. And if you're ever in Juneau, please swing by, say hi. We're a small business. I'm in the building pretty much every day. So ask for Evan. I'd love to meet you and have a beer.
Well, hey, thanks for taking the time to chat with us, Evan. We sure appreciate it. And we wish you guys every success there.
Much appreciated, Bill. Have a good summer.
You too. This is Drinking on the Last Frontier, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. We'll be right back with our next segment.
Hey there, music lovers. Are you ready to feel the rhythm and soul of blues rock? Tune into Glacier Blues every Monday night at 7 p.m. right here on KDLL. Dive deep into the gritty grooves of electrifying riffs of legends like Stevie Ray Vaughan and a host of others. It's two solid hours of pure, unadulterated blues rock that'll get your feet tapping and your soul singing. Don't miss it. That's Glacier Blues, where the past meets the present and the music never stops. Only on KDLL 91.9 FM.
Hello and welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. I'm your host, Bill Howell. In this month's feature, I want to talk to you about alcohol education. America doesn't have a very healthy relationship with alcohol. Sure, many of us have a pretty healthy relationship with adult beverages, but as a culture, we don't really handle it very well. Why is this? Some folks believe it's a holdover from our Puritan ancestors. You remember the Puritans, right? They were gripped by the morbid fear that someone somewhere might actually be enjoying themselves. Some of the religious denominations still popular in the U.S. today view alcohol with the same sort of loathing that it earns in the most fundamentalist of Islamic societies. After all, just over a century ago, we as a people enacted prohibition, thinking somehow that doing so would help solve our social ills. We all know how well that worked out. I've been lucky enough to travel around the world at various times in my life and even live abroad for a few years, and I can tell you that most other Western cultures don't have nearly the problems with alcohol that we do. I've given the matter some thought, and this is what I've come up with. Drinking is something you have to learn how to do properly and safely. I don't know if this seems obvious to you or ridiculous, but hear me out. Alcohol affects everyone differently. It takes time and experience to learn just how it impacts you, what your limits are, what the warning signs are that you've had too much. I know that when I was a young adult, I had to inadvertently overindulge on a couple of occasions to learn my limits. Fortunately for me, I was able to do so in a controlled environment where I was insulated from any of the potentially serious ramifications of being overly intoxicated. Imagine if we treated driving a car the way we treat consuming alcohol. No one would be allowed to even touch the wheel of a car until they reached a certain age, say 18. Then, on their 18th birthday, without any preparation or testing, we'd hand them a driver's license and the keys to a Ferrari with the admonition to drive responsibly. Of course, this sounds insane, but it's effectively exactly what we do to our young adults with alcohol. Let's look at how other cultures around the world do things differently. Minimum legal drinking ages around the world vary dramatically. Most such laws apply only to drinking alcoholic beverages in public locations. The only country with a minimum legal age for consuming alcohol at home is the United Kingdom, which prohibits drinking below the age of 6. The average minimum legal drinking age around the globe is 15.9 years. The majority of countries have set the drinking age at 18. In 50 countries, the minimum age is lower than 18. In only 12 countries, is it higher than 18. And the U.S. is one of only 7 countries that have a drinking age of 21, the highest in the world. The others are Indonesia, Kazakhstan, Oman, Palau, and Sri Lanka. Some states make exceptions to this rule. For example, here in Alaska, it is legal for persons under the age of 21 to consume alcohol on private, non-alcoholic selling premises with parental consent. 29 other states also allow parents to provide their children with alcohol in the privacy of their own homes. But in the remaining 20, even parents are barred from providing their children with alcohol until the child's 21st birthday. Thus, those who strictly adhere to state laws are prevented from introducing young adults to alcohol in a controlled home environment. This typically relegates drinking underground where there is no responsible guidance and peer pressure to abuse alcohol. I could see no reason why parents shouldn't be allowed to provide their own children alcohol in the context of teaching responsible decisions about consumption. The enforcement of minimum legal drinking ages also varies widely between countries and often within countries. In many nations, the law isn't generally enforced unless alcohol is abused. Internationally, the average age at which drinking alcohol first occurs is 12 years. About 80% of young people begin drinking alcoholic beverages regularly at age 15 or younger. That's according to the World Health Organization. Drinking ages in the United States used to vary from state to state. As a young man growing up in New Orleans, the drinking age for me was 18. However, then the federal government passed the National Minimum Drinking Age Act of 1984. It required all states to raise their minimum purchase and public possession of alcohol age to 21. States that did not comply faced a reduction in highway funds. It does not actually prohibit persons under 21 from drinking, but merely from purchasing or possessing alcohol in public. Threatened with a loss of highway dollars, all 50 states eventually complied with this federal mandate. The minimum drinking age of 21 in the U.S. appears to be not only ineffective, but actually counterproductive. Although it was passed with the best of intentions, it has had some of the worst of outcomes for the reasons I've already pointed out. As a state, Alaska has an even bigger problem with alcohol than most. I would suggest that it's time we tried something different. I believe that what we need is the equivalent of a learner's permit for consuming alcohol. Starting at the age of 18, adults should be allowed to consume limited amounts of alcohol under controlled conditions. Just like a learner's permit for driving, a learner's permit for drinking could require that alcohol consumption be done in the presence of a responsible older adult, and that the consumption be limited to low alcohol content beverages such as beer and wine. That food must be consumed, or any other reasonable restriction that the state sees fit to impose. Remember, I'm suggesting this be issued to someone who is already legally an adult in just about every other way. They can vote, get married, buy a gun, so on. Why would it be so risky to let them consume a beer or a glass of wine? After all, they are probably doing so already, albeit surreptitiously. Along these lines, Dr. John McArdle, the president emeritus of Middlebury College, created the organization Choose Responsibility to promote discussion and public debate about how best to reduce alcohol abuse. It has suggested a number of ideas. Choose Responsibility believes federal legislation should not penalize states that participate in a pilot alcohol education program based on a minimum drinking age of 18. Specifically, the organization believes the following. A state should be able to present a plan for educating and licensing young adults age 18 to 20. The federal government should grant the state a waiver of the 10% reduction penalty for a minimum of 5 years. States would create a mechanism to collect data required to monitor the effects of the program. States would submit these statistics to Congress, along with an analysis of the effects of the program. Individual state proposals would include the guidelines for eligibility and suspension of licenses proposed in the program. Choose Responsibility also proposes a new approach to alcohol education. It would be similar to driver's education. The program would be taught by certified alcohol educators. They would cover the legal, ethical, health, and safety issues of drinking. It would consist of at least 40 hours of instruction. Most would be in the classroom. However, it would be supplemented by DWI court hearings, safe ride taxi programs, and community forums. It would require a partnership between home and school. It would entail a final examination that students must pass for licensing. And it would provide accurate and unbiased alcohol education for both drinkers and abstainers. On successful completion of the course, each student would receive a drinking license. It would entitle the recipient to all the privileges and responsibilities of adult alcohol purchase, possession, and consumption. There is much research evidence to suggest that these changes could reduce the extent of underage alcohol abuse in the U.S. Some organizations with a vested interest in maintaining the status quo oppose even discussing any of these proposals. But reducing alcohol abuse is a very important matter in the public interest, both for the U.S. as a whole and for Alaska in particular. I, for one, think it's time we started discussing this.
Hi, this is Otto Kilcher, board member with the Homer Soil and Water Conservation District. Years ago, my family planted chokecherry trees, also known as Mayday trees. That was before they knew they would spread so quickly and crowd out our native trees and plants. They're bad for moose and may also be bad for salmon. We're removing our chokecherry trees. If you have these trees in your property, please consider removing them. This message is sponsored by the Alaska Community Forestry Program, aired by the Alaska Broadcasters Association and this station.
Hello and welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai Soldotna. We've got Lisa Crook of Valdez Brewing, where she is the general manager. Lisa, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for asking.
Why don't you describe your operation there real quick?
Sure. We have a 10-barrel brew house. It's a fairly good size for our community. We have a fairly small crew, but an amazing crew. We're tight-knit, and everybody that's hired is hired locally. We produce the cleanest beer. We have the best water in the state, which I think plays a big part in the crispness and the freshness of our beer. We are very community-driven and oriented. We like to host things for the community. We do fundraisers, birthday parties, you name it. Just a nice, big, open space to allow people to come in and mingle and enjoy their time while they're in Valdez.
And you guys don't have a kitchen, right?
We do not have a kitchen on site. Okay. We don't serve any food. We just serve the beer and seltzer and juices that we produce in-house. We also make some homemade sodas. Right. There is a food truck that is outside in our parking lot area, Poor Betty's, and they serve fresh halibut dishes, poor boys, sandwiches, you name it. So they got a little taste of Alaska there.
I was just asking because that means you guys can't take advantage of the change in the law, recent change in the law.
Correct. Right. Yeah. So our licensing is a little different. So we can't serve any food. We can provide, you know, some small bag snacks and stuff, but we just want to make sure that we are doing the best we can with the beer products, the craft beer products and sodas that we make. So, but people are allowed to bring in, you know, to-go food or anything from anywhere. So we've had people bring in crock pots from home. So a little bit of anything.
Okay. What kind of hours are you guys maintaining this time of year? Are you open 7 days a week?
We sure are. We are open 7 days a week. Our hours are noon to 9 p.m. We just had the 9 p.m. added on as of January 1st when the law changed for the state of Alaska. So we got an extra hour there. And we are only closed 3 days out of the entire year. So we close for Christmas, we close for Thanksgiving, and then we close one day for an employee appreciation party.
And for your beers, are you, I'm trying to remember, I've seen some bottles of your stuff. What are you doing in the way of packaging and distributing besides just selling it out of your tap room there?
Yeah, that's a great question. So our bottles are usually saved for our barrel-aged beers. So we'll take a beer that we want to see change in the flavor a little bit. So we'll put it in some whiskey barrels for about 7 months. We usually save those for around our anniversary time or special occasion. We have crowler cans that are 32-ounce cans that our bartenders will crowler if there's something you don't see in a bottle or a can that you want, and we have on tap. We have a beautiful canning machine, a canning line that pumps out 16-ounce cans, so we sell four packs of 16-ounce cans of just about anything that we have on tap. And then, of course, we have growlers available, and people can bring in growlers from anywhere. We'll fill it up for them and just charge them the price of the beer. So there's a lot of options for taking beer out of there.
Are you sending your cans anywhere else besides just there at the brewery?
We are. We're on a little bit of a hiatus right now just because we're in our busy season here. So we're trying to keep as much as we can in-house for local consumption. We also just hired a new assistant brewer who's fabulous, and we're trying to get her up to speed. So hopefully towards the end of summer, we'll be able to distribute again. But we send our beers out to Palmer, to Anchorage, to Fairbanks, and I believe that's about it.
How's business? If you're hiring people, business must be really good, huh?
Yeah, business has been pretty good. June started off pretty slow for us, but it sounded like that was kind of across the board. Summer was a little slow to start, especially coming off of Halloween season. So we had a pretty good March and April, kind of slower in May, just everybody kind of transitioned seasons. And then just mid-June, we started picking right back up and have had beautiful weather, which I think plays a little bit of the role in how busy we are, because we have a spacious patio area outside that people can enjoy their drinks and food and stuff. So we've been doing really well, and we're pretty happy with how the season's kicked off.
Oh, good, good. So you mentioned that you guys do a lot of events there at the brewery. Do you travel out to do any events anywhere else, like beer festivals or anything?
We try to travel out when we can. We just switched head brewers, so we have a new guy that came in from Colorado with us who has lots of brewing experience, and just kind of getting him to get his feet underneath him before we decide to head out to any festivals or anything. And then again, you know, training an assistant brewer, so he has a little bit of help in the back pumping things out as fast as we need them. So we're on a little hiatus from festivals and stuff for the moment, but we're hoping this fall we'll be able to go to a few that we really enjoy going to. Talkeetna one's fun. We've been to a couple in Fairbanks that are pretty great. So just getting back out there and seeing some other communities and mingling with other brewers and breweries. So maybe having a collab time, you know, here or there. So those are super fun. They just take a little planning and making sure that we're in a good spot to be able to head out and do those.
Well, I'm contractually obligated to pitch the Frozen River Festival that we have here in Soldotna every February. So you should keep that one in mind, too.
That sounds like a good one. Yeah, no, we like getting out when we can, and it's been a little bit, but we're looking forward to heading back out and doing a few more festivals when we have the chance.
So you mentioned your barrel-aged mm-hmm. beers that you bottle. What's your philosophy of beer? What kind of beers do you guys like to brew? You know, what should people expect when they see Valdez Brewing on a label stylistically or anything?
Yeah. Yeah. No, we, our brewer right now kind of specializes in the hazy and IPA and pale ale categories. When people come to the brewery, they usually expect our prop wash Pilsner, which is a light lager, definitely our most popular beer, kind of fits the taste mold for just about anybody. And a few others, we've coordinated some specialty beers for a couple places, a couple businesses around town. St. Lodge, we did a German-style Pilsner for, which went really well. And then we did for a local food truck with the American-Mexican food truck, and we did a raspberry blonde ale for them. And so just trying a few things, but knowing that, you know, we do really well with the lighter beers, and those are definitely our most popular.
Are you guys going to be entering the barley wine competition in Anchorage this year?
Our brewer is hoping to. It is definitely something that we have to plan ahead on. Again, we have to, because of where we're located, getting whiskey barrels and stuff to the brewery is a little bit of a challenge. So being able to get some of that stuff ahead of time and planning that out. But he did mention that that was something he definitely wanted to do this year.
Cool. What other events or anything you guys have coming up that you would want folks to be aware of?
Absolutely. So our big one that's going to be coming up in September, we collab with Four Betty's and another brewery, Growler Bay, down the road. And we host Valdez Oktoberfest. This year, it's going to be a two-day event. The first day, we're going to have a homebrew competition. And the first and second day, we'll have local vendors, but we'll have also vendors from kind of all around the state that'll come over, and food trucks and everything. We shut down the street, do bonfires. We'll have live music and a local radio station that kind of helps host everything. So we're really looking forward to that and trying to promote that as much as we can right now.
And when's that going to be?
That's going to be September 20th and 21st. And it's going to be starting at Valdez Brewing over on Galena Street, the homebrew competition is going to be at the Totem Hotel, which is also not too far away. And then Galena Street itself will be shut down on Saturday, the 21st, for the actual Oktoberfest event.
Okay, so the 20th and 21st. That sounds like it's going to be a ton of fun.
It's going to be a blast.
What about the future? Do you guys have any longer-term plans? Are you looking to expand equipment-wise, more tankage, anything like that?
No major plans right now. Again, we've got a new brewer who just joined us a few months ago, so we just want to make sure that we're keeping up on production. Definitely been higher in demand in Anchorage and Fairbanks area, so we want to make sure that we're also able to distribute, especially in the summertime, because that's when the demand kind of rises for everyone. So right now, it's just making sure that we provide, you know, local brews and getting them out to the other places when we can. So no major plans right now for expanding anything, though.
Okay. Well, any final thoughts that you would want to share with our listeners? Anything you want to make sure that they're aware of? Obviously, the Oktoberfest, but anything else that's happening that they should plan around?
Yeah, well, right now we're having some of the best weather that we've seen in a long time. So if anybody's thinking about coming to Valdez, now is definitely prime time to come. We've had sunshine and 60-degree weather, and our patio is pretty cozy for those cold craft brews and enjoying that sunshine. So if you're thinking about coming to Valdez, now is prime time.
All right. Well, that sounds really good. Well, hey, Lisa, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us. We'll keep their eye out for your brews and hopefully make their way over to Valdez to check out the celebration.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me today, Bill.
Invasive plants and animals threaten Alaska's waters and can spread to new locations by hitching a ride with you. Help stop aquatic hitchhikers. Clean your boots, boats, and trailer to remove plants, animals, and mud. Drain your bilge, ballast, and buckets before you leave the area. Dry your equipment before using it in a new body of water. Be a good steward. Clean, drain, dry. For more information, visit stopaquatichitchhikers.org. This message is brought to you by the Alaska Invasive Species Partnership and supporters.
Hello and welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai Soldotna. Alt beer is one of the few surviving ales indigenous to Germany, along with Kolsch and Hefeweizen. It's a crisp, clean-tasting, full-bodied beer of usually 4.7 to 4.9% alcohol by volume, with a copper-brown color, firm, lacy white crown of foam, and a malty to nutty bittersweet finish. Alt beer evolved over centuries in and around Dusseldorf. Whereas southern Germany is known for its lagers, the Rhineland, like neighboring Belgium, is known primarily for its ales. Alt means old, an allusion to the older style of ale brewing before the emergence of coal-fermented lager beers. The modern alt beer only acquired its current name in the 1800s when the Dusseldorf original became threatened by the new beer, the lagers of Bavaria and Bohemia being transported there by a growing network of railroads. Alt beer is a unique beer style because it requires an unorthodox cool fermentation by a specialized ale yeast that works best in a temperature range between 55 and 65 degrees Fahrenheit. Although most other ales are fermented fast and warm at temperatures between 59 and 77 degrees, and most lagers are fermented slow and cold between 45 and 56 degrees, alt beer's fermentation is somewhere in between. Because of this cool fermentation process, alt beer yeast generates fewer fermentation byproducts, such as esters and fusel-like alcohols. In addition, before being packaged, alt beers are aged in lagering tanks for 4 to 8 weeks at roughly 32 degrees. This slow, lager-like maturation allows the yeast to reabsorb much of the small amounts of esters and aldehydes it produced during the primary fermentation. A properly produced alt beer is an unusually mellow and clean-tasting ale of exceptional drinkability. Alt beer is traditionally served at about 45 degrees in a simple cylindrical glass. When it comes to food pairings, alt beers go well with smoked sausages, pork, or grilled salmon. If you're pairing it with cheese, try Asiago, Camembert, Cheshire, or an aged Gouda. Oddly enough, we here in Alaska are quite familiar with this very German style of beer. That's because Alaskan Brewing Company's flagship beer, Alaskan Amber, is an alt beer. Because this beer is called Amber, it's often mistaken for an American Amber Ale instead of the alt beer style that it actually is. How did Jeff and Marcy Larson, the founders of Alaskan Brewing, end up producing a German-style alt beer in Juneau in 1986? Well, here's an excerpt from page 84 of my book, Alaska Beer, Liquid Gold in the Land of the Midnight Sun, which describes how Alaskan Amber came to be. While Jeff was busy meeting the inspirational leaders of the craft brewing movement, Marcy was beginning to immerse herself in the historical background of brewing in Alaska, and more specifically, Juneau. As we've seen in previous chapters, Alaska has a long and proud history of brewing back to its earliest days as an American territory. In the early 1980s, there were still old-timers around Juneau who had memories of the pre-Prohibition breweries and the beers they had produced. As word of the planned brewery spread, residents would contact the couple to offer up boxes of memorabilia from the early days of brewing in Alaska. Marcy sorted through numerous such boxes containing just about everything conceivable from the old breweries: trinkets, trash, invoices, and old raw material orders. One thing in particular caught her eye: a mention of Saaz hops in a 1907 newspaper article in which the reporter interviewed the brewer at Douglas City Brewing. In the article, the brewer described the challenges he faced in trying to brew a traditional German alt beer, a warm fermenting ale, in Juneau's not-so-warm climate. The brewer also discussed his difficulties in sourcing Saaz hops from Bohemia, now the Czech Republic, but in 1907, a part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire. Due to his supply difficulties, the brewer used only enough hops to balance the beer, with the malt being the dominant flavor element. A local collector by the name of Nick Nichols also had quite a bit of information regarding Douglas City Brewing, including invoices and old raw material orders. Combining the information from the article and the old records, Jeff was able to reconstruct the recipe, and he began making homebrew test batches trying to perfect it. And perfect it he did. After first being released to the public in 1986, Alaskan Amber was voted best beer in the nation at the 1988 Great American Beer Festival Consumer Poll and won a silver medal at the 2012 World Beer Cup, as well as being the foundational beer upon which all the subsequent successes of Alaskan brewing were based. I doubt there's anyone out there listening to my voice who hasn't tasted an Alaskan Amber, but if you haven't, or it's been a while, I encourage you to pick up one and enjoy Alaskan's take on the classic German style known as an alt beer. Well, that's it for this month's Drinking on the Last Frontier. Hope you've enjoyed our show. This month, I'm not closing with a quote, but with a definition. Cynosilicophobia is defined as the fear of an empty beer glass. I'm thinking of starting a charitable foundation to combat this dread condition. If and when I do, your donations will be welcome. Until next time, cheers.
Beers of Alaska, learn about them here. Beers.